afternoon and welcome to Let's Talk. The pastor is in. I'm program host Kip Allen. Let's Talk's the program for the Christian layman, the Lutheran who's a believer but has questions. In short, the program's designed for someone just like me. There's a lot I don't understand. Now, it doesn't have to be soul-shaking. It might just be something that's been bugging my mind for a while. And I find that rather than getting into a deep theological discussion, sometimes a casual front porch style talk of the pastor's the best way to understanding. And that is what this program is all about. Today's guest is Bill Swirla of Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Hacienda Heights, California. Now, I've got my questions, and I'm sure you have yours. Now, you can send your questions by email at any time to letstalk@kfuo.org. Or you can call in during the program. If you're in the St. Louis area, including Metro East, that number is 314-821-0850. Anywhere in the lower 48, you can call in toll-free at 1-800-730-2727. Bill, welcome back to the front porch.
Hey, great to be here, Kip.
Well, Bill, are you a football fan?
I am.
Ah.
I actually like the sport. I never played it. I don't have any athletic skills, and so I'm like the perfect fan. I have my loyalties. You know, I grew up in Chicago. Go Bears.
Oh yeah,
that's
go Bears.
That's an exercise in futility, disappointment, and everything else.
But you remember that team? When was it in
1985?
Yeah, with the dent and sweetness.
Well, sweetness was on the wane, but still, they managed to grab a Super Bowl and they beat the New England Patriots. Always good. But
yeah, well, you know, like, turned out that most of the Patriots were on cocaine during that.
Yeah, probably. And, this was kind of before their dynasty days. You know, like all sports, I tune in when it's important. Like, I watch baseball in the playoffs. I watch hockey. I like hockey. Actually, hockey's my favorite sport. But I did play a little bit of that when I was a kid. I like hockey in the playoffs, and I'll watch the Super Bowl just for the spectacle. So, and it's always guaranteed to be a spectacle. By the way, I remember Super Bowl I.
I do
it
too.
It wasn't the Super Bowl. It was just the NFL AFL championship game.
Yeah, and that was the Jets, wasn't it? I remember Broadway Joe in that.
Or was it the Kansas City Chiefs in Green Bay?
I'm going to have to look that up because I seem to remember Namath being very...
The Jets were there early, but it wasn't until the third one that Lamar Hunt, the owner of the Kansas City Chiefs, said, I think facetiously, let's call it the Super Bowl. And everybody went, oh, and that's what it is. And then they got Roman numerals. But one and two, at least, were just, you know, they were trying to get legitimacy for the AFL at the time. And so they had to have, and as I recall, there were only like about 20,000 people in the stands, if that.
Yeah, it started out very slowly.
And the guys got like a couple $100 to play the game. And so it was pretty awesome. But I remember that. And, you know, I can't remember when the thing went from championship game to Super Bowl to spectacle, but over the decades, we have gone into the realm of cultural spectacle.
And we really have, you know, because the halftime show now is a cultural thing. I think that goes back to the original Apple ad. Remember that when the Apple II came out?
Well, no, that's the advertising. For my money, the ads have never exceeded the 1984 Apple Macintosh ad based on the George Orwellian theme. Kind of a bit of irony there, but, you know, let's savor that for a moment. But you did not even know what they were advertising. It was brilliant. I loved it. I still watch that ad once in a while just for its creativity. But in general, I think they try too hard in the ads, and they're no longer really funny. I don't find them. I find some of them painful. There was a New York Life on the Four Loves. Did you see that?
Yeah,
one?
I did see that one.
That was excellent. I actually sat up and I said, "Whoa!" And they got the definitions of the four kinds of love correct, and it was like, "Whoa, that's a good ad." That was my favorite, was the Four Loves ad.
And then there was that ad for that new soft drink that they based off on the Stephen King thing, The Shining.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, I think they try too hard. They try too hard to push either an emotional button, a patriotism button, a whatever kind of, you know, whatever's working, or just absurdist humor. It's just them. But then there's, of course, the pregame show, which is a spectacle in itself. And that tends to be a spectacle of patriotism and military stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's centered around the national anthem. And if you watch the pregame show, you understand why Colin Kaepernick can't play in the NFL. Because they're like totally in bed with the military. Okay. It's just like that was one of the most awkward moments of the Super Bowl, was those really old veterans that didn't look so good.
Yeah.
I think it's time to move on.
Well, I remember when I was in high school.
Get some Vietnam War vets in there, but they don't make as good TV. And they might agree with Colin Kaepernick. I don't know, but you know, they're very much tied to the military. I think the military pays for
they may, but yeah, I remember back when I was in high school, we called football the 100-yard war.
Well, and it uses the terminology of warfare. Offense and defense. You know, George Carlin had a great routine on football uses military metaphors, and baseball, you know, it's you know, when you score, you get a home run as opposed to a touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, you get into the end zone. But it is kind of militaristic.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the halftime show that everybody, you know, everybody's all over this. You know, who's going to be the halftime show? And they've had everything. They've had like washed up rock bands like The Who, you know, that were, this was one of my favorite groups when I was a kid, but really, you know, and speaking of a crowd that's a little too old to be seen in public, some of these bands are just, they're a little past their prime. And you know, pop singers and wardrobe malfunctions, and you know, the halftime show has just a lore all of its own. So, and this year, of course, is no exception, is it?
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about, because you know, actually, I'm not that much of a football fan. Now, my wife is. I mean, she even made all the special things, you know, for the watching. She did the buffalo wings and the special salad,
you,
and
you did the cuisine. This week.
Oh yeah, yeah.
No,
yeah.
There's a whole, you know, it's like Christmas tradition.
Oh, it is.
It is very much part of the American religion.
Oh, and my mother was an absolute fanatic when it came to football. And it is with all my family, and somehow the gene skipped me. I'm just not into football. I'm not into sports, period. But I am into the halftime shows.
The halftime.
And
well, you know, if you're male and you're red-blooded, you were into the halftime show.
Okay. Well, I wanted to discuss this a little bit, as a matter of fact, because we had Jennifer Lopez, who is 50 years old.
J-Lo.
And we had Shakira, who's 43. I mean, neither one of these. Yeah, neither one of them are spring chickens, you know.
Both of them are moms.
Both of them are moms.
I want to know who their trainers are.
Yeah, that was. I was struck by two things, you know, right off the top of my. Well, more than that. But I mean,
I'm feeling like a total couch potato watching this thing. You know, I'm sitting there in my easy chair.
Yeah.
I got a glass of wine. I'm kind of watching this, and I'm going, you know, those are two middle-aged moms up there, you know, and. I'm having like heart palpitations just watching the show, but that's another story. Okay, you know, but I'm in miserable shape. So I want to know their program. I just want to know their program.
Well, I was really taken in on a positive thing by the syncopation of the not just of the two main performers, but of the backup people. The syncopation on that was incredible.
Oh yeah.
And then
if you look at I look at theatrical value or that and I'm told I heard an interview by a local talk show host in town here that she went to the game, and she said that live it was, and she was in the nosebleed section, but she said live it was even more impressive.
I can believe that.
It was really an amazing show.
And then the energy that these two middle-aged moms did in their routines.
Yeah, my heart's with the backup dancers, because they're getting paid like minimum, you know, and mm-hmm. and they are working hard.
Well, now this brings up the other thing that has really crossed my mind, you know, watching this thing as a red-blooded American male. You have to admit, this halftime show with Shakira and J-Lo was pure sexual exploitation. Or demonstration, however you want to put it.
It would have been exploitation had men done it, or had men been behind it. But I mean, these women are celebrities. They're rich. They have a lot of clout. That's their show. So nobody's being exploited here, except maybe the kids. I think that child.
That was a little bit over the top. Maybe, but the thing that the paradox that I see here is that modern society, especially the social justice people, really, really, really decry sexualization of women. And yet, there are these two women, and they are being praised for what was obviously a sexual performance.
Well, it was a very sexuality forward performance, and to the point where I think in any other context, we might have deemed it inappropriate.
Any other context?
Like, well, I'm saying the Super Bowl seems to get this pass for all kinds of things, but they try to put themselves forward as family friendly, but the NFL is about as family friendly as Las Vegas. You know, they try the same trick, but I mean, you can only walk about 100 feet down the strip with your kid before you got to cover his or her eyes. You know, you can only make Vegas so family friendly. You can only make the NFL and the Super Bowl so family friendly.
Well, this one definitely was not. I mean, Shakira was doing things with her hips I didn't think were possible.
Yeah, well, you know, this is kind of like Zumba goes to the strip club sort of thing. It was sort of a half aerobic show, leaving everybody, including the listener, the watchers, exhausted. And also there were a lot of elements that we normally associate with the gentleman's club, of which there are no gentlemen in a gentleman's club. But
like the pole dancing that J-Lo did?
Yeah. But, you know, everything has context. The whole pole dance thing was a nod. You know, J-Lo's upset because her movie didn't get nominated for an Oscar, because she's got a movie about strippers, and it's called Hustler 2019.
Yeah,
and
I remember hearing about it.
It's kind of gotten the cold shoulder, and so part of that show is kind of a little bit of self-promotion and maybe a little bit of in-your-face to people who are ignoring her movie. I don't know if the movie's any good or not, but it's really, as I understand, it's about women getting the upper hand. See, and I think file that thought away, women getting the upper hand.
Well, going back to 9 to 5, remember that movie?
Yeah. But I think that's on a sub layer here of what's going on. But yeah, it was pretty overtly sexual. And there were times when I felt uncomfortable. I was in the company of my wife and a female friend of ours, mutual friend of ours. And the friend's kind of funny. She's young. We call her our foreign exchange daughter. She always comes by the house for Sunday supper. We know her really well. She's an exchange student. And she knows all these songs. She loves Shakira. So she's singing along, you know, and she's German. So she's singing along and bobbing her head. And it's like she knows everything. She knows all the songs. And she just kind of rolls her eyes. And it's not a big deal to her. You know, and my wife and I are going,
well, Germans have a different view of life and sexuality than Americans do,
and Puerto Ricans do, and Colombians do too. I think, and I think that's part of where everything is all mixed up. Is you know, J-Lo is of Puerto Rican descent. She was born in the Bronx, but she's Puerto Rican parents,
and Shakira's from Colombia.
Shakira's interesting. She's Colombian, but her parents, at least her father's side, are Lebanese. Wow. And so she's got Middle Eastern, and she's got you know, Central American, and that's another culture. And many of these cultures are very sexuality forward in ways that we're not. We're kind of more puritanical, and you know, America's kind of funny is that we use sex for everything but what God intended it for. And yet we're embarrassed by it and mortified when it's like right there in our face, whereas other cultures are pretty, you know, they're pretty relaxed. That, you know, what
we have the misfortune to be,
don't wear at the beach would you know, cause most of us to be arrested and have to report for the rest of our lives. You know,
well, we had the misfortune of being initially settled by Puritans. And most of the other early settlers were all religious refugees. So,
yeah, no, that's right. Now I'm not. I guess my my thinking is you have to, it's like an onion. It's like a cultural onion that you sort of look at all the various layers. I think the inclusion of children lent to a somewhat of an uncomfortableness. Yeah. You know, I made a joke that said, you know, I'm a mandated reporter. Mm-hmm. As a pastor, and if that kind of show were going on in the presence of children in anything I was responsible for, I'd be mandated to report that as child abuse.
Well, I think they're
so
probably trying to.
The NFL should be reported. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I think they're probably trying to make a political statement there by having these children in the semi cages.
Yeah. So you got the kids in cages. You had Shakira with the rope. You know, the bondage.
Oh yeah,
thing. And that wasn't sexual. That was political.
Yeah.
And you have J-Lo hawking her movie. So, you know, how many layers do you want to go here?
Having J-Lo's 11-year-old daughter in the show. I mean, how would you like to have your mother do what J-Lo did?
Yeah, you know, that kind of brings up an interesting test that I have when I kind of think about these things. Is I call it my sister wife daughter test. Hmm. Is would you be comfortable if that were your sister, your wife, or your daughter? And, you know, if the answer is no, well, maybe you ought to kind of think about this a little bit. And that's definitely a no. I would not be comfortable with any of those three women, in that kind of a spotlight. So it's tough. And then, of course, I think you saw a number of people caught a freeze frame, where the pole dance looks amazingly like a crucifixion scene with all the worshipers and adorers kind of bowed prostrate at the foot of the pole and J-Lo looking like a crucified figure. That's one of those things that it's either a very unhappy coincidence or, you know, another level to be mined. I don't know.
Well, I think it was too well done, I think, for it to be coincidence.
It was very well done, although there was nothing. I didn't catch it when I watched the show. It's very fast because she's in motion. But so it's kind of funny. The responses, and I kind of, you know, stuck my toe in the social media water to see where the responses were. And I was surprised at some rather conservative women who were rather defensive about all of this and said, hey, you know, these are entrepreneurial women. These are successful women. And not only that, but, you know, they come from cultures where belly dancing and that kind of, that's mainstream in their culture. That's part, you know, part of their entertainment. Latin dancing is very seductive.
The tango.
Salsa. So, you know, I was kind of surprised. I think it all depends on how you lens it, huh? We just got through a big Me Too thing. We're watching the Harvey Weinstein trial and the way women are used in Hollywood, or at least older Hollywood. I think those days are ended, or hopefully nearing an end. We're in a kind of a post-feminist age where women want to be respected on the basis of their merits, not their looks. And then you get this, and this is supposed to be empowering. So as a male, I'm kind of confused.
Yeah, I am too on this thing. And that's, you know, maybe we should examine this from a biblical viewpoint. Certainly, you know, God spelled out some very specific instructions to us.
Well, you have, you know, when you talk about a biblical point of view, there are at least two layers to that going on at the same time. You have God's perspective. And God's perspective is that he is our maker, and that we are his children, and that we in our lives reflect him as the image of God, and we are to bring glory and honor to him in all that we do. And, you know, there's some, but the other layer is a cultural layer. The Bible is set in the Middle East. The Bible is set in the Near East of the ancient world or in the Greco-Roman period. And they have their standards too. And so those standards, you know, they're kind of interwoven. Certainly in the New Testament, both Paul and Peter, talk about Christian women dressing with modesty, not even braiding their hair. Braided hair was considered, seductive and a sign of a woman of the streets, that kind of thing, not adorned with pearls or gold. But extolling, you know, the inner beauty of a godly spirit, that's kind of the New Testament standard, you know. There is an instance of belly dancing in the New Testament.
Was that the Dance of the Seven Veils?
Herodias's daughter, who did her little dance for Herod and his cohorts mm-hmm. at his birthday party, and he was so enamored, and I imagine it was kind of at the level of the NFL halftime show, the Super Bowl halftime show. He offered her up to half his kingdom, and ultimately then the head of John the Baptist yeah. on a platter. But that whole scene is very sordid and creepy, you know. That's not his daughter. That's his brother Philip's daughter. This is basically his niece.
Well, some years ago, I was at a grand opening of a Greek restaurant. I was covering it for a magazine.
Were they dancing on the tables?
Not on the tables, but boy, they featured some interesting belly dancers. And what really struck me was that not only were the belly dancers doing their thing, a lot of the women in the audience in the restaurant joined them.
Absolutely, I have seen this. Have you ever seen the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
Oh, yeah, My Big Fat Greek, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, but that one explores that business. See, that's Mediterranean. I have a theory.
Okay,
and that is where men are very powerful in society, is basically patriarchal.
Mm-hmm.
Women's sexuality comes to the forefront. Because that's where the power is. Because let's face it, you and me, we're both men. There's nothing dumber than a man in front of a beautiful woman.
Oh, man, nothing that is dumber. So true. Oh, gee.
And so that's their power. And I think that's when people talk about, you know, those cultures and empowerment of women, I think that's exactly what they're talking about.
Well, that may be why Islamic countries always want to keep their women covered.
Well, yeah, but apparently when at home and the ladies are amongst, you know, other ladies, they're just raucous. But, you know, there's that line in My Big Fat Greek Wedding, the man is the head and the woman, the wife is the neck. And the head turns wherever the neck wants it to go. See, and so there's an idea that I think they go hand in hand here, that where you have a strong patriarchy and you have a dominant, where the power of society is in the men by and large, that's where female sexuality kind of is the counterpoint, because that's how you get men to do what you want them to do. Hate to say it, but I think, we don't understand that because we have all been schooled in an equalitarian school.
Mm.
You know, and that feminist schools we're not supposed to notice. You know, we're supposed to notice that that person, not woman or man, that person is a, you know, good business person, a good firefighter, you know, and we've neutered everything because male, female is not supposed to matter. But boy, it's hard. It's hard to undo that male and female. He created them, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Have you ever heard of the Notebooks of Lazarus Long?
No.
Okay. Well, this is a fiction thing. Actually, it was a device written by a science fiction writer by the name of Robert Heinlein. And Lazarus Long is one of his characters. This guy, according to the storyline, he's been living for many, many, many years. And in the far distant future, his end is finally approaching. And the people came and went to him and said, since you've listened along, why don't you write us the wisdom of what you've learned through the years? And so that's where the notebooks come from. And one of the things in it is, why should a woman want equality and give up her inherent superiority? He also said, always keep your clothes and your weapons where you can get them in the dark. A bunch of other things.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's that. You know, that demonstrates something is that we tend to exegete everything. We interpret things through kind of this lens of our own knowledge, experience, upbringing, and whatnot. Biblical culture is different than ours. Puerto Rican culture is different than ours. Colombian culture is different than ours. And so we're always kind of lensing and evaluating and judging based on this this kind of matrix of things that we see things through. So whereas one person sees a very empowered woman who's, you know, she's got all the moves and the men will do her bidding, others see this as exploitative or you know, the whatever. I think that's kind of how multiculturalism becomes the sort of confused mess that it is. You don't know what the rules of interpretation are.
Yeah, and here they're saying both opposite things at the same time. You know, doublethink, or what was it in Alice in Wonderland, where it said I can believe two different things before lunch.
Yeah, we're Lutheran though. We're comfortable with paradox, but you do have to kind of embrace the paradox for what it is. And the thing is that paradox, there's a lot of power in paradox because of that tension, mm-hmm. and that is a tension. So I think the first thing to acknowledge is there is a tension there, and to have a meaningful discussion about what that tension is and why it's important. Because I think this is at the core of our humanity. It's about being male and female.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit more on the other side of the break, because it is getting to be that time. And, oh, we got a bunch more to talk about. We're talking about sexuality. So if you want to join in, we're waiting for you.
Friday on Issues Etc., we'll have Pastor Peter Bender lead us in a teaching on the sacrament of holy baptism and Jesus walking on water. It's This Week in Pop Christianity with Pastor Chris Roseborough, and we'll get a review of the movie Marriage Story from Pastor Ted Geese.
Issues Etc., live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO.
North of the Alps, in the Jura Mountains, a boy and his grandfather are trapped in their chalet. A fierce snowstorm has cut off all paths of rescue, and that's just the beginning.
Grandfather, move!
Get behind me.
When doubt, danger, and death surround you, will your faith survive, or will it be buried in the snow? Based on a true story, on the next Lamplighter Theater.
Saturday mornings at 11 on Worldwide KFUO.
Hi, I'm Pastor Mark Hawkinson, host of Moments of Assurance Worldwide KFUO. On the next MOA Weekend program, I'll be sharing thoughts with you about these words from Jesus. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand. How about your light today? Is it on a stand for all to see? And what does that entail? I'll talk about it on the next MOA Weekend this Saturday and Sunday morning at 7:45 a.m. on KFUO.
Touching the lives and the hearts of our listeners with the Word of Christ.
Sharper Iron is such an incredible, amazing gift. I thank you so much for what it's doing for me and what I know it must be doing for a lot of other people. God bless.
To leave a message on the KFUO comment line, call 314-996-1542. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Worldwide KFUO.
Oh, born a slave, by the end of the 19th century, Frederick Douglass was a leading abolitionist against slavery, an advocate for women's rights, a diplomat, and an advisor to presidents. During the Civil War, he conferred with President Lincoln, addressing the treatment of black soldiers.
In his 1852 speech, What to the Slave is the Fourth of July, he used Psalm 127 to describe the plight of slaves.
We wept when we remembered Zion, for there, they that carried us away captive required of us a song.
And referencing Romans 10:8.
And in the darkest hours of my career in slavery, this living word of faith and spirit of hope departed not from me to cheer me through the gloom.
The Bible, impacting the movement against slavery.
Brought to you by Museum of the Bible.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome back to Let's Talk. The pastor is in. Today's guest pastor is Bill Swirla from Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Hacienda Heights, California. If you got your questions, well, you can email them to us at letstalk@kfuo.org, or you could call us in the St. Louis area. It's area code 314-821-0850. Or anywhere else in North America, actually in the lower 48. I don't think they have this in Canada. Call us toll-free at 1-800-730-2727. We are discussing sexuality and what it means and why there are so many different versions of it, why some is acceptable and some isn't. Now, Bill, you hit upon some inherent views, I think, that God instilled in us, you know, from the very beginning. One thing that occurs to me, for example, is why are warfighters, why are warriors nearly always male? Of course, they're the exception, but they're nearly always male. Well, because they're disposable. Women aren't.
That's true across the board. The more colorful birds are male, the more colorful fish are male. Being colorful means being visible. Being visible means being eaten. But the females of the species tend to be the ones that can be hidden in plain sight a lot because they're necessary for the propagation of the species. I'm not sure it's about the dispensability of men, but I think it's their makeup. I mean, we are testosterone driven. And, you know, the more testosterone you have, the more aggressive you are, also the stronger you are. And you know, we have the traits that are at least traditionally useful in combat and defense. Once you introduce technology, it kind of levels the playing field a little bit. But at least traditionally, if we're going to fight, you know, in hand-to-hand combat, I think men have an advantage in that.
Well, you know, as they say, Sam Colt made God made man equal. God made men equal. God made man. Sam Colt made them equal. Yeah, that was it. But you know, you're right, because you know, back more than a few years ago, I was deeply involved in the paintball scene. Loved the sport paintball, and that is the only sport I know of where women can compete on an equal or even better basis than men.
Yeah, you have to be agile. You have to have a good situational awareness. You have to have good reflexes.
And the paintball gun is a great equalizer.
If we were hunters, my wife would be a much better hunter than I am because she has uncanny situational awareness. She's able to pick out the thing that doesn't belong, which is what makes a good hunter. They spot things that just, you know, there's a little motion behind those leaves or something. But she sees, so when we go on whale watching tours, she sees whales before the spotter in the boat does. So she's very, very good at that. And so it's a different skill set. Once you take the strength and agility or strength and speed out of the game, it becomes a different matter. But one of the things we're talking about is the non-interchangeability of being male and female. And this is something that you know, when you have these collisions of culture, you know, men are different than women, but the same. And I think that's what Genesis 2 is pushing at, the Adam and Eve narrative, where, you know, Eve is not from the ground. God did not make a second kind of human, but he took Eve from the first human and then brought her back to him. So he lost something and he got something back. But it reminds us that Eve is taken from man, not developed parallel to him. You know, so not even though sometimes it seems like women are totally different creatures, they're not. But there's a complementarity, and with complementarity comes tension too, and so men, I think, use their sexuality in a different way than women. Women seduce, men are seduced. Men men are on the hunt.
So to speak.
And you know, all of this goes back to the word of God, by the way. You know, God blessed the whole kit and caboodle and said, be fruitful and multiply. He said it to the animals, and he said it to man particularly. And that's the creative word that creates all these interests and urges in the first place. And it's that desire to be fruitful and multiply. It's not just simply the selfish gene wanting to propagate itself. It's really inherent in our being alive by the word of God, and the word of God creates that. Now, you know, coming from God, it's good. But sin always separates the good from God, right?
Mm-hmm.
Drives the wedge between the good gift and God. And so the gift of sexuality, the gift of sexual attraction, the gift of the beauty of a woman, the strength of a man, it becomes then divorced from God and becomes self-serving. See, and I think that's where you see the problem is that sin distorts the good gift of God into something else. A lot of that wiggling and dancing should be going on in the bedroom with their husbands.
Yeah.
That's where that, you know, and yeah, didn't we mention this last time that we were talking on the porch is that intimacy and community and covenant, they all go together. You know?
Yeah, they do. And yeah, you're right. We were discussing that.
And when you take the desire, the attractive desire of male and female out of that context of intimacy and lifelong commitment and covenant and community, then sex becomes a commodity. See, and it's something that it can be sold, whether in prostitution or to advance one's career or to use as a tool of power to get others to do your will. See, mm-hmm. So, but that's what sin does. Sin's always doing that in all of us all the time.
Boy, that's so true. You got to think back, and maybe you got to be a man to fully appreciate that. Boy, did I just say that? That is so sexist. But is it true? Men and women, I think, certainly view sexuality from a very, very different viewpoint.
Well, the whole business is different. And you know, men don't get pregnant either, by the way.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I mean, the outcomes are radically different, too.
Absolutely.
And that's why women, getting back to the original point, women's sexuality is extremely powerful because they have the power of no. See, mm-hmm. A lot of that halftime show, how I interpret this as a male is, you know, these are two very attractive women. Saying, I've got it and you can't have it. See, that's very, very powerful.
That is a powerful message.
And like I said, men go stupid in front of that. They go, oh yeah, well, I'm taking it anyway. See, and then you get into the Harvey Weinstein problem.
Yeah. And now there's the movement to desexualize men in a lot of ways. You know,
same thing on the other side.
Yeah.
And that's kind of part of the problem here. And this is going to sound really weird on a religious broadcasting show, but if you want to try to bottle up that NFL show,
mm-hmm.
You're going to do as much harm as good. You know, if you're going to desexualize women, then you're also going to be desexualizing men. You know, and an androgynous society is not male and female. He created them. It lacks the dynamic. It lacks the tension. Or, in the terms of that New York Life commercial, it lacks Eros.
Mm-hmm.
See, Eros is erotic love, the drive, the pull of the sexes toward each other. And that's not bad. That's God-given. It's a good thing. But it needs to be tempered by agape, by self-sacrificing love, by philos, by the love of brother, and that is, you know, of community. And so Eros needs a context. Unbridled Eros is just crazy-making. Okay, that's the orgy. The orgy is unbridled Eros.
Well, I've heard people say, and I think even Luther may have written this, please correct me if I'm wrong, that to think the sin sometimes is as bad as doing the sin. And hence they think, well, I lusted in my heart, therefore you've sinned.
And Jesus said as much, mostly just to kind of make sure that the Pharisees understood that they weren't off the hook.
Yeah. But, okay. Well, in that context, you know, otherwise I'm in deep trouble. You know, as my dad used to say, you know, in his older years, he said, son, I'm old. I ain't dead.
A lot of guys said that at halftime.
yeah.
It was a good game, by the way, but that's
you know, I didn't watch it. My wife did. I just watched the halftime.
Whether these games aren't rigged. Has the NFL become like world wrestling, you know, where we all know it's not real, but we watch it anyway?
Oh, yeah.
I had a very wise teacher who once said something. We were on foreign soil. We were actually both teaching in Russia at the time, and we were just sitting around talking one evening, and he made this comment. It's totally profound. He said that whenever men and women work together on something they are passionate about, there will always be an element of eros in the room that is sexual attraction. It's true in the operating room. It's true in the boardroom. It's true wherever men and women are working together. The only way to avoid that is to have the all-male workplace or the all-female workplace. But when you mix up men and women, there's going to be that element of eros, of erotic love, of attraction in the room. Whether you're married or not, whether you're, you know, you're faithful or not, that's not the issue. It's always there. It's built in.
Well, you're working for the same goal, and that brings a certain intimacy to it. Especially,
it does.
Yeah, especially, for example, here at the LCMN. Oh, boy, am I going to get in trouble for this one. But
the day Kip gets fired, all right.
But especially, you know, when you throw in a religious element to it, where we are looking at something higher than ourselves, you know, when we're trying to achieve something more than simply commercial gain.
No difference there. That's right.
Yeah.
There's no difference in that aspect between the corporate boardroom and you know, the church devoted to these very, very passionate kind of goals.
Oh, absolutely.
And people bringing the, you know, their whole being to it. And when you work together in close quarters and it's male and female, there's going to be that magnetic attraction because the word says be fruitful and multiply. And you know, you can't stop that. You have to acknowledge that, embrace it, give thanks to God for it. Don't act on it.
You know?
But you know, part of it is to see the good. You have to see the good. And if you don't see the good and it's just evil and condemned and covered up and shameful and everything, then we've slipped into the devil's trap of the opposite ditch.
Well, the way I look at the women here at the ISC is different than from the way I look at women on the outside. I mean, I have an enormous amount of respect for these women for what they are doing. Maybe because I know something about them. I know that we're working for the same goal. I know what we're talking about. When I'm out at the store or what have you, I'll have a different view. I'll have a different viewpoint as I see an attractive woman out there, and I'll think thoughts I wouldn't think of. Of a woman here at the IC.
But, and I'm assuming here, but you still show the same respect.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key. And I think that's the burden of responsibility that we have as men is that women must be respected.
And that's part of self-respect as well. How can we respect ourselves as men
if we are disrespectful
to women?
I like to lens it through the Virgin Mary and, you know, the mother of our Lord. Our Lord had a mother.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, she represents the entire female side of humanity all the way back to Eve, you know. The ancients connected her to Eve as the fulfillment of Eve. And so she's the mother of the one who is our life. And therefore she brings an honor and a dignity to all women. And so women need to be honored and respected for who they are. They're the mothers of our children. They are our mothers. And that's why I'm really sorry that we've lost some of those elements of respect. You know, the doffing of the hat when a woman goes by,
opening the door,
or a woman walks into a room and we stand like, you know, the judge or the jury just walked into the courtroom.
Mm-hmm. Oops, sorry about
holding
that.
A holding a door open, you know.
And sometimes I get you yelled at.
Or kicked. But I don't see that as a sign of subservience or anything. I see that as a sign of respect.
Oh, absolutely.
I hold the door open for people who are older than me, which means that I hold the door open for fewer and fewer people these days. But people hold the door open for me because I'm an old guy now.
Boy, do I know.
And that's respect. I like that.
I ran into, literally bumped into someone in the hall the other day, a young man. And he said, "Oh, excuse me, sir." I looked around. "Where's my dad, dude?"
Oh, yeah. You remember the first time that somebody behind the checkout line called you sir?
Yeah.
And you're thinking, oh, I'm getting old. Now I love it. It's like, oh, civility has returned. You know, it's kind of funny. I just made a trip to the East Coast a few weeks ago. And there's, believe it or not, compared to the West Coast, there's still civility on the East Coast. I was called sir more, and wearing clericals is okay. You get respect. Here you get stuff thrown at you and people swear at you, but on the East Coast, there's still a modicum of respect. So as crazy as the East Coast can be and New York can be, there's some civility going on there. Just reporting from the field.
There is. And you know, there's a, you know, manners have a place in society. You know, civilization and society is at best a flawed machine. And courtesy and civility is the lubricant that keeps the machine going. You get rid of that, you're going to have trouble.
You know, I just had a thought. I would love to have a conversation with J-Lo or Shakira, and not for the reasons that you think. I mean, yeah, of course, what guy wouldn't, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of getting down to the Wayne's World level of things. But I would love to have a conversation with them, because I assume these are smart women. And these are they're business women. They're running. They have an entrepreneurial business.
Oh, yeah.
Their own brand and celebrity and stuff. But what I'd like to know is what are you teaching your daughters? What's the take home here for your daughters? Because you mentioned that J-Lo's daughter was in, and she's got a pretty good voice. Mm-hmm. So, and she's clearly used to being in front of crowds and the whole celebrity stage thing, you know, she understands that. But I would like to engage them sort of as women and as mothers. Is what values or what sort of worldview are you passing on to your daughters and our daughters too? All the girls who watch this and sing along and bob their heads and smile and think it's just really entertaining. But what are we saying? You know, if you don't have that kind of body, you know, forget it. You're done for. You know, you're going to be the low end of things here. If you want to succeed, you have to be hot. Is that what we're saying? Is that the message that we're putting out in 21st century?
It is one message that is being put out. It's certainly been this last halftime show, and I think it is it's sad. You know, how many wonderfully talented people are out there who are really sharp, who have some great ideas, who are wonderful people, who aren't necessarily physically attractive. And on the converse side of that, I was talking to one of the people here at the Senate who asked me a little bit about my background. The first trial I ever covered was of a woman who was she was on trial for murder. And no question, but she was guilty. I mean, I was in the preliminary hearing, saw all the evidence. And you know what, Bill? She was one of the most beautiful women I had ever seen.
And she was on trial.
Yeah.
For murder.
And she was on, not just murder. I mean, it was a particularly brutal murder. Her parents and her little brother.
And, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And there were some other aspects to the killing as well that really made it gruesome. But I mean.
Well, you know, and we talk about outward beauty. You know, the Bible speaks, the New Testament talks about the inner beauty of godliness and mm-hmm. holiness, which shines through, too, in a different way. But outer beauty and seductiveness and all of that, that's a very fleeting thing. In fact, there's not going to be too many more years, and J-Lo and Shakira ain't going to have those moves anymore.
But they'll still have their industrial empires.
they will have a lot of money, and I hopefully they're smart enough to know what to do with it. But you know, that's a very fleeting thing, and I think we have to kind of pull the lens back and look at the long perspective of life, and say, you know, these fleeting things, whatever they are, a man's strength or a woman's seductiveness, these things are very temporal, and they're fleeting, but. You know, our status as a child of God, our dignity as a priest of God, our reflecting Christ into the world as salt and light of this world, that's eternal. And in many ways, sometimes my experience is that shines more brightly the less attractive we are. You know, as we age gracefully or not gracefully, it's that inner beauty of godliness and holiness that commands a lot more attention. You know, look at some of the videos of Mother Teresa or people like that.
Yeah.
In their deep seniority, who show a kind of beauty that far surpasses anything of a Super Bowl halftime show.
That takes a degree of maturity that many people, unfortunately, don't have. Sometimes me,
yeah.
Too.
Well,
yeah, I'm guilty.
It's an entertainment culture. Sex is entertainment. Is that really a good use for our sexuality? Is entertainment?
Well, you know, sex has always been entertaining.
Of course it has.
I think humans, and I think I read one where that porpoises are the only creatures on Earth that engage in sex for recreation.
Dolphins.
I hear dolphins
Flipper?
Do it.
Yeah. Flipper. I'll never look at Flipper the same way again. All right. So I'm just kind of totally messed up by that now. Thank
you
very much.
Well, I'm glad you on one finally, Bill.
We are. You know, we're biologically we're animals, and we have all the animal stuff. We're just spiritual animals, and being spiritual animals, we have a bigger responsibility here. We just don't act on our biological instincts and our hormones and our fight or flight kind of thing. But we have our reason, and we also have the Word of God, and God is relating to us in a unique way. Other than the rest of the critters that he made. So it's one of those things where we, being priests of creation, we do have a slightly higher calling than the animals. The animals are doing, whatever they do, that's fine. But I don't think we get our template of behavior from the animals. That's not a good good idea.
No, it's not.
In fact, I would say that sin reduces us to that level.
I'm always amused at people who talk about how beautiful Mother Nature is. You know, she's mean.
she is nasty. Doesn't exist. We're not,
yeah,
Baylis.
Well,
okay?
I'm speaking metaphorically here.
Nature is cruel.
Very.
Nature is amazing. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. It's awesome. And it's profoundly cruel. And, you know, and you don't matter.
No, you don't. You don't.
You're just, if you get in the way, that's it. Boy, you know, you're just food for the next whatever's going to eat you, you know. I saw a thing where even your pets will eat you. If you die in the house, your dog, your cat, they'll eat you.
Oh, yeah, they will.
So much for what kind of love is that? That's true. I read coroner's reports. They actually, I don't know how I got onto that. But,
well, I actually covered one instance of that, by the way.
What do you think the NFL should do to right itself, if it needs to be righted? What do you think? How do we restore the dignity to the Super Bowl? That's really the question on the table today.
Oh, boy. I'm not really sure if it can. I mean, I do remember one of the things I used to love about football. As I said, I'm not a huge football fan, but one of the things I loved about halftimes were the marching bands.
We could have marching bands. That'd be awesome. Have high school marching
bands.
Yeah,
absolutely. I love those things.
Let's promote music in the rising generation. Or, you know what I think? I mean, a friend of mine suggested this, but country music. Everybody likes country music.
Oh.
And the women are pretty, and the men are good looking. And just do country music. And it's patriotic. And if you do country rock, it's loud, and it'll be cool.
And half the country will hate it.
Yeah, well, we're tribal that way. So,
yeah.
But I think country music. But no, you're right. Let's do like we do in church. You know how in church we play music nobody likes?
That's true.
So let's do that. Let's do marching bands. That'd be get the Leland Stanford Jr. marching band. They get banned from everything for like rather illegal formations and things at halftime. They do things that shouldn't be done. But that would be kind of fun too. But I think the game needs to, the integrity of the game needs to be restored. It's a football game.
Somebody, it's a game.
Please remind everybody.
It's a game.
Football,
it's an athletic
game.
Competition.
It's about football. It's not about Americana. It's not about patriotism. It's not about diversity. It's not about female empowerment. It's a football game. Maybe that's where I'm ticked off the most. It's bait and switch. You know, I came for a football game and I ended up in a gentleman's club. The drinks were better, though.
Okay.
I was pouring.
I'm sorry. Okay. Well, Bill, on that note.
Is Matt Harrison on the line yet?
Not yet. Okay. But we are at the end of the program.
Yeah, next time ask Lance or one of the Preuss brothers, okay? Don't get me into these discussions.
Okay. I'll do that, RK. Okay, Bill, I appreciate it. So that's what we've been talking about, sexuality and how it fits in with Americana and different views of it and how we react. Interesting. And we'll never know that, you know, never really know the answer.
You've been listening to The Pastor Is In, a weekly chance to chat with a pastor. Your support is vital for this program to continue. To learn about giving opportunities, call Mary at 314-996-1518. You can make a gift safe, secure, and easily online at KFUO.org. Thank you for listening and supporting. The Pastor Is In on Worldwide KFUO.